Honey, this is Winona LaDuke, and I'm going to talk about the black snake, this time the one out in South Dakota. As the plagued Keystone Pipeline spills 200,000 gallons of oil near the Sisseton Dakota Reservation, the Nebraska Public Service Commission made a convoluted approval of a pipeline permit. In the meantime, the Dakota, Lakota, and their allies stand strong. Nothing has changed at all in our defense of the land, air, or water of the Ocheti-Sacoan lands, Faith Spotted Eagle told hundreds gathered for the signing of the treaty to protect the sacred. If anything, it has become more focused, stronger, and more adamant after Standing Rock. Oyatewin Brushbreaker, a 97-year-old elder, reminded those present, reaffirm the boundaries of that treaty. Keep out the black snake you've been talking about. The gathering to protect the sacred was sponsored by the Braveheart Society of Women, Wichoni Uptipi, Dakota Rural Action, and others who brought together more than 200 water protectors. This is a story about Wendigo economics, or Wasichu economics, if you like. We can say that it begins in the United States, where a fossil fuel economy rules, or we can say that it begins in Canada, where 90% of the value of the Canadian dollar or the loonie is based on tar sands. Now, that's a stupid idea. Simply stated, we have Canada with all the oil company allies and a landlocked province, which is Alberta, and no way to get all that to market. This is also the story of how unlikely that is to work out for Canada, because we are stopping them. We are killing the Wendigo. The Keystone and the spill. So what the heck? The Keystone Pipeline is not even fully operational and it can't operate safely. The mid-November South Dakota Keystone spill, well, the past six spills were not supposed to happen. That's what they all tell us, after all, it's new pipe and such. TransCanada's June 2006 pipeline risk assessment found no reason for alarm. Quote, the estimated occurrence intervals for a spill of 50 barrels or less occurring anywhere along the entire pipeline system is once every 65 years. Applying these statistics to a one-mile section, the chances of a larger spill, i.e. greater than 10,000 barrels, would be less than once every 67,000 years. So that's worked out well. To be clear, the Keystone has now had at least a dozen spills. They're all kind of going down the line in succession. One journalist asked if the pipeline was passing a kidney stone. In a 2011 analysis, University of Nebraska professor John Stansbury estimated there would be at least two major spills per year, some potentially reaching as many as 180,000 barrels. So I told you so is what we're talking about here. So here we are. We've normalized pipeline spills, and the Public Utilities Commissions of Nebraska, South Dakota, and Minnesota are in the thick of confusion. This is, in fact, the new norm. In 2016, there were 220 significant incidents on pipelines or pipeline spills in the U.S., with 3,032 since 2006. Those provide a stark reminder of the environmental hazards of pipelines. And new pipelines also have catastrophic leaks. The cost of these leaks since 2006 has amounted to $4.7 billion. Really not sure on cleanup. Watchdogs for these? Well, inspectors for leaks are few and far between with unclear regulatory jurisdiction. The United States now has 553 pipeline inspectors, 208 federal inspectors, and 345 state inspectors. They are still responsible for nearly 5,000 miles of pipeline each. These inspectors work for PHMSA, the Federal Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, and it's pretty much high-risk pipeline roulette. So while Donald Trump is so busy approving all these pipelines, another reality continues. Water protectors challenge pipeline viability, so does oil economics. A few months ago, there were four big pipelines proposed to bring Canada's tar sands out of that landlocked province of Alberta. On October 5th, the longest tar sands pipeline proposal, the $15.7 billion Energy East, was scrapped. Canadian oil economists point to the economics, the decline of tar sands production and prices as the driving force for project cancellation, augmented by Canadian Premier Trudeau's more stringent review of pipeline projects, including greenhouse gas emissions and downstream impacts. One down, three to go. While TransCanada received approval this last month for the pipeline, they don't have a route. The Nebraska Public Service Commission voted 3-2 to give the project a go-ahead, but they rejected the route. TransCanada must now submit an application for an alternative route or appeal the decision, a process that could take up to 2 years. And they've probably got to get easements all along a new route, and they don't have those. So that is pretty catastrophic in itself for a pipeline company. One thing for sure, the new route will face fresh opposition. That's the Cowboy and Indian Alliance, and they defeated the pipeline last time. So as Wendigo economics goes, Tar Sands divestment is climbing, electric cars are coming online, and Fox News reported in June that the Keystone XL is facing a basic challenge. The oil producers and refiners the pipeline was originally meant to serve aren't interested in it anymore. In other words, the company has new customers for the pipeline, and a pipeline without customers is not going to be built. At an Enbridge hearing in St. Paul this last month, a Canadian official sat quietly in the audience, worried and watching. There was probably more than one. At the end of the day, he approached one of our attorneys, asking if the tribes were likely to sue and stop the pipeline. It turns out that TransCanada had asked the Alberta government to buy some oil shipping space on the KXL line. And Windigo Economics Wizards of Alberta are thinking about hedging their bets. It's an uncertain time for sure. If I was South Dakota, I would be making sure that there is a pretty big cleanup of this catastrophic oil spill before anything else moves ahead. And maybe before TransCanada goes bankrupt. In the meantime, the Dakota and their allies remain committed to protecting Mini-Wachonee. The coming battles are going to be new, not like the ones of the past, and they will demand all of our strength, Lakota organizer Judith LeBlanc writes. The traditional Indigenous practice is that you must respond to adversity with courage, humility, compassion, and love of the community, as we always have. The No KXL movement is being built from a spiritual starting point that's rooted in the traditional Lakota, Dakota, and culture and origin stories, with the grassroots and sovereign treaty rights. Native peoples have a legal, moral, and spiritual and inherent right to be caretakers of the planet. At the gathering to protect the sacred, Orville Looking Horse tells the crowd, "We have been here before, time and time again. We have faced this invasion in our camps and communities, but we will always prevail." Julian Brave Noise Cat was there as well. After the treaty is signed, we came together to dance in victory. As the drummers hit the honor beats, we raised defiant hands. Women clutch red scarves symbolizing scalps and emblematic of the victory our people and planet so desperately need right now. The path forward for the Keystone XL remains unclear. Landowners, tribes, and opponents of the pipeline still have time to organize the appeal. And in the meantime, more than 5,000 people have already signed up to join Indigenous people in acts of civil disobedience when and if construction begins. This is Winona LaDuke talking about Windigo economics and pipeline speech.